If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Spooky Halloween month for the Z Podcast.
Okay. My intros have been off lately. It's the CU Podcast for October 1st, Tuesday, 2019, alongside Frightful Ian Ferguson.
Woo!
I'm Scary Pat Contry. What are we talking about? Some good gaming and pop culture news. Spider-Man back in the MCU. Mario Kart Tour on your mobile device. The Atari VCS back in the news. As well as At Games having some issues with Walgreens, of all people, and Namco Bandai. And your Q&A in a Patreon poll. Ian,
Pat,
you got a video review in the works. This is shocking.
I have a video review in the works, and I have a podcast coming out, too.
What?
The Extra Napkins podcast.
Okay, were you going to tell me about this?
I was telling you about it earlier this morning.
What's the Extra Napkins podcast going to be, Ian?
It's John and I talking about food topics, just whatever.
Okay.
Just anything.
Okay.
Anything.
All right.
Yeah.
I hope you're not getting too splintered between that. Yoikoi Kids, you have all these other podcasts out there, not the good old CU podcast, your bread and butter CU podcast.
Just keeping my head occupied.
Not your bagel and cream cheese CU podcast, your bread and butter CU podcast.
No, bagel and cream cheese bagel and cream cheese is far more important than a bread and butter.
Just to get back to that harrowing story last week, I'm not against bagels and cream cheese. But butter should be an option as well with your bagel. It should be. I wouldn't discount it.
So I need to ask, what I don't remember this thing, this bagel issue.
With my Uncle John from last week?
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. That's right. Okay. I couldn't remember. I thought it was about a pizza. That's right. It was about
bagel. I don't want people to think that. I'd say 80% of the time I use cream cheese on my bagels, but you should be able to have a nice, everything bagel with butter.
Butter is a fine option.
I'm just going to say it.
Cream cheese is my go-to, but I will butter a bagel.
I mean, to me, one of the finest things you can eat is a nice bagel with cream cheese and lox, or tomato slice on there. Like, that's the best thing.
It was
you
one of the
eat.
First things I ate when I got into Buffalo. Was I walked across the street to the bagel shop and got a bagel with lox.
Yeah. Whenever I go to
Do you want the capers and the tomato and the onion? Yes, I want the capers and the tomato and the onion. Put it on there.
We still got to go to Bally High brunch with Vonnie. And you know what I'll eat? Lox. Lots of lox. Lox of love.
Will Joey Rue DeSena pop out of one of our bags and take your lox?
And take the lox off my plate like Clan of the Grey Wolf did one time?
I really wish I hadn't brought that up. I should have waited to see if you would have brought it up because you brought it up every time.
No, I totally forgot. Thanks for reminding me how disgusting and inappropriate that was 7 years ago that Rue did that to me. He took the lox off my plate.
That's fine.
For God's sake.
It's not the end of the world.
He said, well, Pat, there's more right there. I said, yes, there's more right there. You can get your own lox. That's why it's a buffet. I'm not a dirty heathen. We love Rue. We miss Rue. I'll give Rue a call. I'll find out what the latest in the LED lighting technology world is.
I was just going to say, I love that light bulb wizard.
Yes. Yeah, he works in LED lights. You know, the YouTube thing's far gone at this point, but he likes the LED light stuff. A certain Super Nintendo guidebook is somewhere in the Pacific Ocean right now. I radioed the captain the other day just to make sure everything was fine. Everything was good in one of those gigantic cargo ships. You can go to ultimatesnes.com right now and read through it. Ian, what do you think of the book so far?
I flipped through it last night, actually, when I was sober, very sober, and I enjoyed it. It's visually appealing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was hedging my bets that you even cracked it open.
Oh, no,
at all.
I did.
Wow, my heart is actually like a flutter now, Ian, because in the past you had been like, I haven't had time to look at it.
No, I looked at it.
What any reviews you actually read through? Or
no, I was going through like the articles and just the layout and the design.
Isn't the layout nice?
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. I didn't read anything yet.
Well, okay, I'll take it. He cracked it open. He looked through it.
I did. Well, and the thing was, I was walking. I was literally, what happened was, I was walking to the kitchen to get a glass of water, and I walked by it, and I was like, I need to open this book and look at it. So I sat down and I opened the book and I looked at it.
Thank you, Ian.
Yeah,
our friendship isn't totally dead yet. You opened up the book that heart and soul went into, as well as a lot of money. Because I pay the people that work on my book.
It's a good thing to do.
That's my competitive advantage, being a ethical business person.
I mean, also, your book is not garbage.
That too? That's part of the, what you pay. You get what you pay
anyway.
For. Yes. Thank you, Ian.
I'm sorry.
Wow, Ian is actually sticking up for Pat. This is good. We're in lockstep here. So speaking of Super Nintendo, I got the controller. Where did I put the controller? The Switch Online controller. Oh, it's over there. Ooh.
Jesus.
My cleaner fell. Switch Online controller here. It looks like a Super Nintendo controller.
Yeah, it looks nice.
That's all I can say about it. And then it's also in French and also in Spanish in the bottom. Interesting. There. Yeah, I'll try it out.
Give it a go.
Have you been playing some Super Nintendo?
I played some. Have you even downloaded the Super Nintendo?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. But I did download Mario Kart Tour and play that, which we'll get into.
We will get into that.
You think I want to play more Super Nintendo games after I edge the book? Like, I want to relax a little bit. I want to cool off a bit.
Fine.
But the big news, Ian.
Yes.
Our favorite little Queens teenager, Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the MCU.
I'm shocked.
I'm kinda a little bit. Like a little bit.
There was no way that to me seemed like way too calculated of a way to bring up hype.
No, oh no, I think it was touch and go. Because this is why, Ian. Because if it was not planned, all that shit went down days before D23. So they couldn't mention Spider-Man at all, Disney. And that was strange for everyone.
That's fair. I don't necessarily mean that it was planned, but there's no way that they were not going to reach some sort of conclusion on that. There's too much money on the table for all parties involved.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, this happened when Ian was gone on his Buffalo garbage plate trip. Was that the deal between Sony has the movie rights for Spider-Man. They have since the early 2000s when Marvel went bankrupt and sold off all their properties to stay alive, the movie rights. And they have them all back now, with the exception of Spider-Man and the weird Universal Hulk deal I won't get into. That's still a very strange one. They can use Hulk in the movies, but they can't have a Hulk movie. That's why Hulk is teaming up. And that's why, like, right. Ragnarok was like a team up. Like,
it was like a, anyway, it was a Hulk movie.
It was kind of a half a Hulk movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they did negotiations, but they fell through to keep them going. So Disney/Marvel, Kevin Feige, who's been the mastermind behind the MCU, throw all the money at him. He produced Homecoming and Far From Home. Sony still distributes it and does that and puts up the money, but they don't actually make it. It was Disney making it. And in return for that, they're getting 5% of the ticket gross. Disney was 5%. So they wanted to renegotiate, and then Sony was playing hardball. They didn't want to give up any more of the money, and they settled on... I'm not Nostradamus. They settled on exactly what I said they were going to do, which is 25%. So Disney puts up 25% of the money, backing it. They get 25% of the ticket gross. That to me is fair, because this is what would have happened. If the next Spider-Man movie came out not tied to the MCU, all the bad press, they would have made at least 25% less anyway. At least 25% less. And the fact that they're putting up less of their money, they would have lost out anyway, Sony, on this. They would have lost out big time. Just from the bad PR, especially.
That was my thing. It was like they announced it, and one, like I said, too much money on the table. I thought, but they would not recover from that.
No,
that was a lot of bad blood.
Especially since they were so tied into the MCU from the first two movies with Happy and everything else. From what I read, they couldn't have used probably most of the elements from those movies if the deal fell through. They had to like start from scratch for a third movie. It would have been disastrous.
From what I understand, Happy would have been out.
Definitely. Yeah. But I'm not sure the other characters could have stayed either. I don't know how that was in place. Either way, it would have been sloppy. Would have been sloppy. Did you see it yet?
I haven't seen.
Did you see Far From Home?
I haven't seen Homecoming.
Wow. Okay. You got to see them. You do. They're worth it. Are they on Netflix? They might be on Netflix.
No, they are, and I do want to see them. I fell off of the. I have to see a couple of those.
So this is what happened. All you Venom morons saw that movie and gave Sony a false sense that we can do stuff on our own here. That garbage movie. So they're like, you know, we don't need, you know, even though Disney resurrected the character for us because we didn't know what the hell we were doing with the Amazing Spider-Man movies, we don't need him anymore. So they worked it out, thankfully. They worked it out, and you're going to have at least one more Spider-Man MCU film, and then they negotiated for one more appearance in another MCU movie. But what's going to happen is that they're going to try to do their own Spider-Verse. So they're going to have MCU movies of Spider-Man, and then Sony's going to do their own fucked up Spider-Verse that no one asked for or cared about, that's going to have no connection to the MCU likely.
Cool.
They announced a Madam Web movie. I've read, Ian, hundreds of Spider-Man comics. I don't remember any of them that had Madam Web in them. I honestly don't. I couldn't name her as a, and Spider-Man has one of the best villain galleries next to like Batman. I don't think she's in the top 20 Spider-Man villains. And I can start rattling them off if you really want me to. For Spider-Man villains that should have a movie, if you're going to go that direction, before you get to someone like Madam Web. You're looking around because you're like, I don't know who that is.
I don't know who Madam Web is.
The whole point is that she's like a multiverse character, so I guess they're trying to do their own thing to bring Peter back into the Spider-Verse with Venom, and no one would see that. I mean, no one's going to see the Morbius movie. Less than nobody would see a Madam Web movie if they went in that weird direction. There's maybe three Spider-Man villains that could carry their own movie. They already used one of them, Venom. Maybe you could do a Green Goblin movie. Maybe someone would see a Norman Osborn movie. I don't know. But that you're running thin at that point. They thought about doing a Kraven the Hunter movie at some point. I don't know. A Sinister Six movie. It's silly. But the fact that we're getting a Spider-Man movie in 2 years, at least you'll get to tie up what the huge cliffhanger, which I won't give away now, from Far From Home. You'll at least get to tie it up and put a bow on it, even if then after that point there'll be no more MCU Spider-Man. I still think there will be, because the amount of marketing money that Sony gets from this to see the movie, you got to keep them in the other outside movies. You have to. Like, everyone wins.
Oh, I can't imagine that. I have a feeling that they'll make it seem touch and go, and they'll probably try to renegotiate as often as they can. But I can't ever see him completely leaving the MCU once it's in there. And my main reasons are, like I said, purely monetarily, it would be stupid to. And two, you're going to get a lot of fan backlash here. I mean, you don't want to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is what I'm going to say to everyone out there. Don't see the Morbius movie. Sony's getting too big for their britches. No one wants to see these weird villains. Well, Morbius is an anti-hero character, but no one cares. Morbius had a small run like in the early 80s, and no one's thought of him since, really. And don't say, well, he had a one-shot in 2006. No. No one in the mainstream cares about Morbius or cares about vampire movies like that, that they're going to see that.
Excuse me, I love vampire movies.
Besides Ian, okay, then wait for Blade to come out then, all right? Wait for the Blade reboot to come out there. All right, well, so that's what's going on. We're going to be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo October 19th and 20th.
2.5 weeks.
My God.
I know.
Okay. I got stuff to do before
then. Yeah, I leave 2 weeks from Thursday, so yeah.
You're going on Thursday?
Going on Thursday, coming back Monday.
We see our friends. It's the mecca of the retro gaming community there. You know, everyone's going to be there.
I always recommend that if you go to one, go to Portland. And if you go to two, go to Long Island as well. Very good convention here.
Hey, but, for the pizza alone, you go to Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. That was a magical night, Ian, with me, you, and Frank.
That was a night. That was a night. I had a couple of magical nights just eating shit in the lobby of that hotel.
Well, you didn't invite me to the other shit-eating party. I wasn't there at that one, unfortunately.
You were out having sushi.
Oh, the sushi.
Yeah, right, you were all out having sushi. I didn't have the
intestinal fortitude
to go out and be very public.
Oh, real quick, the Raw reboot happened last night, and they have a whole new announced team, including our pal, or my pal, Brennan Williams, who's in NXT now. And then when I saw the announcement, I had no idea he got into announcing. He's been the 205 live announcer as Dio Madden. I had no clue. So when I turn on Raw, I'm like, I know that guy. 6'7", gigantic black man. I'm like, I know that guy. Then I double checked. I'm like, that's him. So if I told you the story. I met him at PAX, East like 6-7 years ago when he was just coming off of being on the Jaguars. His dad was an NFL player, a super nice guy, and you know kept in touch throughout the years. He got into NXT, and I had no idea that he's now the color commentator on Raw, and he's big into like you know anime stuff and video game stuff, which a lot of the younger guys are now. But well, congrats to him for making it to Raw as a color commentator.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool? And he's doing it along with who's he doing along with the other the 205 play by play guy Vic what's his name? God, I don't know. And then Jerry the King Lawler is the third mic. But yeah, congrats to them. It's Vic Joseph. That's the color the play by play guy that's on there now. And they did a great job for the first time. It was pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to grow into it, you know, and as you go, that's a big thing going from 205 Live to a 3-hour Raw. And that's like, wow, holy crap. But
yeah, that's a huge jump.
That's a big, huge jump. Such as the audience is like, you know, 10 times bigger at least that's watching Raw season premiere there. So, yeah, good for our pal Brennan there. Hopefully, I run into it. He was actually at Retropalooza Houston like 3 years ago since he's from Texas. Because he trained with Booker T, I believe. So he was down there at the time.
Oh, cool.
Because Booker T has his wrestling school there. And I have another friend who might be training with Booker T, which I won't talk about right now. So anyway, so congrats to that. And then the competitor AEW is tomorrow, Ian. We got to check that out. We'll check the competitor.
It is tomorrow, isn't it?
AEW Dynamite.
What is it on?
TNT.
TNT. Do I even get that?
You don't get TNT? Oh, you don't have cable?
I don't have cable.
Okay, well, you might have to get some other nefarious streaming ways.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They can use NordVPN to help. NordVPN.com/CU Podcast. Use code CU Podcast. Save. There. All right, Ian.
Yes.
Mobile games are huge right now.
They are.
We talked about Apple Arcade a week ago. Having fun with that.
Yeah.
You know, Frogger. Good game.
I'm still screwing around with stuff. I found one called What the Golf. That's pretty fun.
What the Golf?
What the Golf, yep. That one's pretty good, too.
So I downloaded Mario Kart Tour, Ian.
Yep.
You've been having fun with it.
Well, fun. Fun is a...
Relative term?
Relative term. So I downloaded... So right I had Mario Kart Tour on the pre-download. And it downloaded, and I just kept looking at it for a couple of days, and I was like, I'm never going to play this. It's not going to be any good. I don't care. And then 2-3 nights ago, I was sitting around, and I was like, you know, I should probably just see what this is like. I was like, we're going to want to talk about it on the podcast. So I fire it up, and I'm playing it. And I'll say one thing about the game before I get into all the other shit. I think the core game is... pretty decent, to be honest with you.
It's a good translation of Mario Kart onto a phone.
It's a one finger control. It's a Mario Kart game that I can play with one hand. I can hold the phone in one hand and play the entire game.
Wipe your butt with the other hand.
I can play it well. It gives me a little bit of a. It scratches the itch for
lawn care outside.
Lawn care scratches my itch for lawn care. No, it scratches the itch to play something like Mario Kart, and I think it's done well.
Yeah. So the cart always goes forward, and then you're controlling the jumps by tapping. So you still get those same sort of bonus jumps like you do in the Mario Kart.
You don't actually have to do it.
You don't have to do it.
No, it just does it.
It does it for you.
Yeah.
I was hitting my thumb on it each time. I'm breaking my phone doing that. Really?
It just does it.
You get the auto bonus for doing the jumps off the ramps.
Yep.
I don't know, I feel less skilled now. Ian, you should have told me that. So you hit the back button or front button to throw items forward or backwards.
So basically, swipe up or swipe back.
Yep. And then you can turn left or right, or you can put it on regular steering or drift mode, where you don't turn anymore. You just do the drift, which you can still turn. It just makes it more difficult, but then you get the drift turbo boost.
Right, and it works pretty well.
It works pretty well.
I do a lot of the drifting in Mario Kart on console, so sure. I felt like I could get a hang of the drifting on the iOS version, and it's not hard to pick up. The problem is, this game is absolutely packed to the gills with ways that it's trying to get money out of you. You can earn stuff, but like you can earn stuff like coins, rubies. These are like the two main currencies. Rubies are used to fire off the pipe, which is essentially the gacha machine that you would see in a lot of other similar games of the type. And you get your not exactly random prize. It can be a new cart. It can be a new racer. Or you can use coins that you do earn in races at a very slow, slow drip to go into the shop that changes, I believe, daily.
Coins purchase things directly that you can earn.
Right. Well, coins purchase things directly that you can get randomly out of the gacha machine.
Okay, but the coins you earn in the races.
Yes.
For coming in first or second or whatever, and for doing like tricks or whatever, and hitting enemies with your items, you earn coins as you go.
Right, exactly.
So that's where you don't have to pay, then you got to grind away to get the coins.
The rubies, on the other hand, you can pay, and they will give them to you in small amounts during, level ups.
You can earn them as well. So right now, I played the first two courses, I earned 20 of them. A little more than 20. I think I did two gacha things. Rubies.
Oh, they start you off with 10.
Okay, so then I probably earned about 15 because I think I've done the machine twice. Once it's like, hey, try it out, kid. And I tried it. It almost forced me to try it.
It forces you
to do five to get into it. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, this is how you get into gambling.
So the way the game works from there is there's really no real difference between the characters and the carts from what I can tell. With the characters, at least, it's the difference between, I believe, their special weapons that they
sure.
each get.
So I started off with Toadette. They gave me Toadette as my first random racer.
They give you Toadette, I think, from the start. And then my random racer, I got Peach right out of the gate.
Oh, I got Bowser.
Which made me happy.
I earned Bowser or got Bowser.
When you start a race, though, different racers, different gliders, and different carts all will, like, per track, certain racers' carts and gliders are better for certain tracks. So that's where they get you, because otherwise, as soon as you get a character that you like, you'd probably be less inclined to keep firing off that cannon. But they actively made the game so that they want you to, you know, constantly be swapping out characters so that you get a bigger advantage in races. Like, if you have a racer that is particularly useful for the course that you're going to be on, when you get an item box, you'll get three items instead of one item.
So it's no longer...
Or two items.
You have your favorite racer, and you should be good as long as you maybe switch out your loadout on your... Now it's like, you know, you got to switch your racer.
Right.
And that gets you to purchase and to...
Exactly.
Earn more coins. That's
And
you level up each individual racer too.
Right, and then you can get doubles of racers and use those to level up the racer. So it quickly becomes this acquire game. It makes the game look ugly with all of the advertisements for get this New York pack and this, that, and the next thing. So.
And it's the price of these things. Let me just talk about that.
Oh, yeah, the currency is gross.
So the Rubies pack, three for $2, that gets you what, a launch out of the...
It doesn't. A launch is five.
Okay, so that doesn't even get... Why do they offer three? I guess 10 is $6. That gets you two launches. If you want to go up to, like, 93 is $50. So that would give you, what was that, Pat Math, like 93, like 30, 31. Not even 93 divided by five is like 16. 16 fucking launches. The good news is that they give you the odds of getting this crap. That's listed directly.
Yeah.
The odds of getting that crap.
And a lot of it's low.
Oh, yeah. They're below a percentage, a lot of them. They're like 0.3% some of them. But they also have stuff like the Gold Pass, which is $5 a month subscription. So what that gets you is you get more badges from gold challenges. You get gold gifts by racing in tours. You unlock the 200cc race. I didn't know you can't earn that by yourself. I just earned the 100 one. I think I just earned 150.
I can't imagine 200cc being any fun on this. Just to throw that out there.
Because it's hard with one figure to go as is.
Yeah.
To stay on the track and everything with the drifting. So that's $5 a month to get a CC track and the opportunity to earn more crap. And then, like you said before, you mentioned there's a special offer for $20 where that gets me 45 rubies. You get the Mario Racer, and you get a five-star tickets. What the hell is a star ticket? A star ticket can be exchanged for grand stars. Well, what's a grand star now? I don't know what that is.
I believe those are the stars that you unlock by doing good in the courses to keep yourself moving through the circuits.
So in order to keep playing, you have to get that?
No, no. Like, you unlock stars by beating courses with a certain score. You need a certain number of unlocked stars to unlock the next course.
Gotcha. I mean, you can earn them as you win the races, but this will get you further.
I believe, yes.
I'm already getting confused. There's too many different things going on. There's like four different types of currency. You can buy eight different things. I'm really not surprised it went this direction. Because obviously, Super Mario Run did poorly because it wasn't free to play, but it was $10. Which I thought was well worth it, but in the iOS environment...
That's what I would rather do.
In the iOS environment, people aren't used to that. I got a lot of play. I completed the entirety, all the black coins. I love Super Mario Run. I thought that was worth $10 to me.
Super Mario Run's a great game.
This is the opposite extreme, though.
The way that it's put together... and I must stress again, I like the actual gameplay. I think it was fun to sit on the couch and literally watch TV while also kind of playing, and like it was fun. But this really saps all the joy out of a game that is normally incredibly happy. And they went from Mario Run to Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing one, and then to
Dr. Mario.
And with each one, their games went from something that was kind of polished to introducing some mechanics to now they look like the free-to-play shit that's everywhere. And it's a bummer. And then on top of all that, the game comes out the week after...
Apple Arcade,
which is $5 a month. $5 a month on Mario Kart Tour doesn't unlock the game. It just lets you get maybe a couple extra rubies when you get to the present bot. Like, so when you play the tours, as you go along the tours, which are, you know, the four track races, every once in a while you'll unlock, you'll reach a present box, and the present box will toss you a couple rupees and some rubies and some gold. Well, if you have the gold pass, it'll give you a couple more rubies and a little bit more gold. It's
the worst of what people don't like about mobile games.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it now. There's the items that you can buy with coins that you earn are timed. So I'm going to grind to get coins or maybe...
Expensive.
Or I can spend the extra money to get coins easier. And then they have like the... I have 11 hours left to fire the gotcha fucking pipe thing and hopefully get Pauline. Hopefully. That's 11 hours left.
Yeah. I believe if you fire off the 45 rubies, like if you
definitely get it,
you definitely get it. But still.
That's like spending $20 at the Jersey Shore wheel to make sure you get the item instead of maybe by chance giving up $5
right
on the wheel. It's just dirty at that point.
So
I think people, I'd rather spend $10 again to get it outright. Give me, and maybe you still have some things here and there. Give me 85% of the game for a price. And then maybe give me the opportunity to buy a little more, I'd be happier.
Sure, but you know who wasn't happy with
Nintendo?
That? Nintendo, because it didn't work for them. I give them credit for trying, but it didn't work. And despite the fact that, like, I have these concerns, you have them. A lot of people online who have played it, I think the best thing most people have said is, hey, the gameplay is okay, but this shit is garbage. All the, you know, the surrounding shit.
It's just too much. It's not just one or two things. It's like five things.
Right.
I'm looking at.
It's either on its way to, or it already did break all records for like a game launch on iOS
for people that downloaded it.
So sure. Yeah, so it's gonna make Nintendo some money.
Absolutely,
it's gonna make them money. But at this point, I've really kind of lost interest. I'm almost sad that I did end up opening it and trying it, because it's kind of a bummer that I think there's kind of a cute, fun, simple racer at the core of this, but it's just so loaded with cynical money grubbing bullshit that I probably will not go back to it.
Yeah. It's a shame, but I mean, it's funny that in the course of like 4 years, it went from we'll never have mobile games to now this is the ultimate mobile type of game, but with Nintendo's polish and cute characters, but now we're going to try to get as much money out as you.
And
we're going to turn you upside down and shake the coins out of your pocket like in a cartoon.
And we were both guilty of saying that they wouldn't go this route, but they did. And I mean, here we are. Even Nintendo has to succumb to the mobile market.
But even the Dr. Mario game just came out like, what, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
It didn't have a third of the amount of stuff that this has.
Apparently it does. We just
didn't, we didn't get to that.
Just didn't play far. And I played a lot, but I guess after like the generous, what it seemed like, fairly generous grace period, I've had a lot of people tell me it's real bad in that one, too.
Oh, really? If you lose, you have to pay to get back in more quickly?
Well, and I think they do a lot of I think they probably added more doctor characters, so there's more gotcha stuff. Like
I was having fun with Dr. Mo. I mean, I was having fun with it. Like I said, I think there's a flat fee. I'd pay for some of this stuff.
If people are into this, like if
can I do multiplayer against you? Is that something we can do right now or no?
No,
that's not in there yet.
No, as far as I can, that should be there at some point. But I think multiplayer right now is just comparing leaderboards for the ranked
and there's
cups.
On top of all this other stuff, I got to track now position points on top of like rubies, coins. And all this other stuff. It's just a lot to look at.
Here's a reasonably fun game. How can we make it not fun as quickly as possible? And they figured out how to do it.
I think with the multiplayer, I'll come back and probably try out the multiplayer once they put it. It says inbound. It's not in here yet, multiplayer.
Okay. Yeah, the only multiplayer there is right now is you can add friends and then compare your rankings.
So right now, there's 20 different racers. They'll obviously add more. And then every day you can buy enough to get one every day with your coins. You know what's so weird about this? This is how I know something's wrong. I can't easily find the word race. I'm on like the shop screen, and then I hit X. Oh, now I come back. Like you get stuck on the shop screen easily.
Yes,
it's like being in a casino. You get just look at this, and then now I get back. So I completed the Mario Cup Tour, and then also the Donkey Kong Cup. I completed.
It's a masterclass in design.
The game is fine. It's not perfect. I don't think it's perfect, the racing, just because the I still would love the ability to both steer and drift. It gets tough to drift, to turn. You can do it, though. It's just a lot more sliding and, but you can do it, So, okay. Well, I guess I'll still play it here and there. Ian's done, though. He doesn't like
I'll probably play it, here and there, but I can't see myself putting any real amount of time into it.
Okay. We'll see if the next, maybe the Zelda game will have you have to buy the rubies when you kill the Octoroks. You have to purchase them. Got to upgrade. You got to earn to throw your sword. You got to earn an upgrade. I don't know.
Well,
wacky.
The one thing that I always used to say I always said we wouldn't see like a touchscreen, Zelda game. I think back then we were kind of naive too in thinking that when people were talking about Nintendo putting games on the iPhone, we were still kind of in that era 5 years ago where Capcom was throwing Mega Man 2 on the phone for no reason with a shitty D-pad and buttons, and I was like, there's no way Nintendo's gonna do that with Mario and Zelda, and sure enough they haven't. They've just taken it in a way that I didn't account for and is honestly fairly, it's just as gross.
But it makes money. If it didn't make money, they wouldn't have all these elements in there.
Hey, that's capitalism.
Speaking of making money, Ian, the Atari VCS, which had a successful Indiegogo and raised millions of dollars. We haven't heard much about it, but our pal, Kieran McCarthy, did an update. God, we love Kieran.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Kieran McCarthy at the Register did an article. Time to check in again on the Atari Retro Console. Dear God, it's actually got worse.
So in this article, he basically goes over how at the beginning of the summer, Atari said that, they would have announcements. They would have info over the summer, and we got to September 23rd, and they had not made any announcements during the entire summer about the system. So someone commented on the their Facebook group. On your blog and repeatedly online, you promised substantial updates this summer, but it's the last day of summer, and it seems pretty clear from your social media activity that there's no immediate update coming. What happened to the updates? Here's the amazing response.
Okay, I'm ready, Ian.
Fear not! The company's social media folk responded, "We certainly have something in the works. We did not specify it would be on September 22nd, 23rd exactly. Sorry for the misunderstanding. We appreciate everyone's patience as we craft an exciting announcement to share with you all." Oh, and we will have an exciting announcement later.
Maybe they meant Indian summer sometime in October?
I have no idea. Because that guy didn't say that he was expecting an announcement on the 22nd or 23rd. He was explaining that there was supposed to be some sort of updates throughout the summer. I don't think these people realize that the 22nd and the 23rd, that's the end of summer.
In Australia, summer's in December, right? So maybe they meant Australian summer. Some other hemisphere where there's a summer going on.
Yeah. So the response to that was, "Liar! Yes, you did! And now you say again soon. Come on, show us something huge, because I'm very angry." I'm trying to convey the caps here.
I gotta lower the audio on the headphones here, Ian.
Another chimed in, "You said a few times this summer. Now we are in fall. Tell us a real date. Don't lie to us anymore." So there's a lot more of that was going on.
Then it went to the Reddit, right?
Then it went to the Reddit.
Oh, God.
The Atari got booted from a subreddit that they were modding on for basically deleting anything negative being said.
Asking about the project that they raised millions of dollars.
Yes.
They raised millions of dollars.
Yep.
Here.
Someone put up a scorecard since shutting down backer updates on Indiegogo. References to other people's work or achievements, 12. Direct Facebook appeals to pre-order or buy something, 11. That's exclusive of other social media. Pictures or renders of non-functional plastic boxes, at least 18.
Oh, that's cheeky, Kieran.
And concrete indicators product is being manufactured, 0. I don't think that wasn't Kieran. That was a post. Atari responded by deleting that post.
Oh, okay.
On a Reddit forum that it didn't run, but had been invited to serve as a moderator.
Woo!
So,
It gets better.
Yeah.
Kieran doing the digging. So one of the guys that worked on it that was, you know, going to be leading the way, Rob Wyatt, is no longer working with Atari. He was the guy supposed to be working on this.
Good.
Someone asked, "Is Rob Wyatt still with Atari?" On the old subreddit, I heard that Rob Wyatt had left the Atari VCS project to start his own project. Is that true? The response, "Hello! Unfortunately, this rumor is circulating on the web. Rob Wyatt and Tim Giant worked on many different projects. Atari fans should be excited for the game board, too." Didn't answer the question.
Yeah,
does not answer the question at all.
Nope. Yeah, that doesn't answer anything. So that's kind of where it was at. And then I think maybe they realized they had to announce something. So,
because I keep pushing this back.
Right. Now it's March 2020, I believe, is the day it's supposed to be released.
Because originally it was supposed to be out December 2019. That was from it was supposed to be before that, I think. So December 2019 is when it was supposed to be originally delivered.
Okay. So Atari revealed today, as in 2 days ago, that AntStream Arcade will be bringing thousands of retro games to Atari VCS consoles when the system launches in March 2020. This is from VentureBeat. The Atari VCS will sell for $250, da-da-da-da-da, and it's going to have an Atari VCS version of AntStream on there.
Oh, God.
I'll get into AntStream in a second. So, what they're going to do is the exclusive Atari VCS edition of AntStream Arcade unlocks an instantly accessible collection of classic video game titles. In addition to an existing library of 2,000-plus officially licensed games, and we're going to touch on this, the exclusive AntStream Arcade Atari VCS app will include the largest collection of Atari games available on demand, in both original and enhanced edition formats, curated from across the brand's many arcade, home, and handheld platforms. Accessible from the Atari VCS system dashboard, blah, 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 blah. There will, of course, be a subscription.
Oh, they're not free games added on by the good folks at Atari?
Not free.
Oh, okay.
Isn't this thing supposed to be coming with free games? Probably. Like 150 free
probably
games
Probably the Atari 2600 games that have been licensed forever.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So the subscription, in addition to waiting for this plastic box that doesn't do anything special, you have the pleasure of paying $10 a month for this service. or $8 a month for a yearly subscription you pay up front at $95.88.
And again, this will be a streaming service you can get at, like, at anywhere.
Oh, well, it's not. It won't have the Atari stuff.
Good.
Unless, of course, this falls through, and inevitably it does have the Atari stuff because Atari needs to make money. That's my thinking, too, is I don't believe that this is actually going to be exclusive for that long. But, and this is not a problem with AntStream. It's just their business. We covered AntStream previously. They're doing what they're doing, but keep in mind that this isn't like you're not getting access to 2,000 incredibly well-known retro titles.
No.
You're not getting access necessarily to your specific youth. You're not going to be getting a bunch of Genesis stuff on here. You're not going to be getting a bunch of NES or Super stuff. You're not even going to be getting a ton of like
NES stuff
or arcade stuff. You are going to get some of that stuff, but this is the streaming company that we covered a few months ago where the majority of the stuff that is like being licensed, the retro games and the retro systems, it's like the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah,
I think there's Commodore stuff. It's
British computer games. It's the same Data East stuff you've seen licensed on all the all-in-one little plug-in plays and controllers and boxes like that. Yeah, you get some Neo Geo stuff in there as well. But this isn't what people are going to be clamoring to play necessarily when they buy their Atari VCS. Not necessarily. Right. They're not going to be like, oh, on the Atari VCS, I want to play some random ZX Spectrum game from 1985 on there. That's like not what they're looking for.
Now, in terms of the exclusive Atari stuff, we'd have to see what they're going to be putting on there as part of the exclusive.
That'll be exclusive to that, but that's not included with the Atari VCS.
Right.
So they're already separating it out.
Right. So you have a sandbox mode. You have the walled garden, as they keep calling it. And now you have access to some exclusive Atari stuff, but you have to pay for it. It's strange. It's very weird. And this, to me, just seems like a desperate attempt to announce something. Because I don't know what people want on the VCS, but I don't think it's this. I think people were hoping for something original, unique. And I don't think they're going to get any of that.
But we knew it was going to be anything unique.
Oh, we knew that. I mean, we knew that. Yes.
Because even the video with whatever they were showing off in that video, they were just showing off playing Atari 2600 games on this mystery box, mystery
computer
box.
And anything cool that you want to do, you'll have to go do in the sandbox mode. At which point, you're just playing with a shitty fucking TV PC. A Linux-based box that you can maybe do some streaming on. It's absolutely absurd. It's ridiculous. So I don't think that this is a step in the right direction. It's a step. Once again, there's no real ill will here with AntStream. Hopefully they
AntStream wants to. They're gonna do a license deal.
Do a license deal. Sure. This is not it. This is not it.
This is not it, Chief?
Is that what you're saying? This is not it, Chief.
Well, it sounds like Atari's CEO, Frederick Chenet, has a lot of work to do in order to get YouTubers back on his side, maybe, and covering this in the future. You know, I got a couple of suggestions for Frederick, though, if he wants to be able to do this. What he can do, the last time that that I thought about Atari being popular was probably like 83. Maybe he can get like a 1982 Trans Am and go over to some YouTuber's house and just hang out with them for a bit. You know, that's an idea that Frederick can do in order to get a YouTuber back on his side, and they can just, hang out and have an interview that's a softball sort of thing. And then we could also do, mail out some $10 Atari VCS t-shirts to some YouTubers that can randomly wear them in videos. You know, because a YouTuber might be able to, trade their integrity in covering an upcoming project for a $10 t-shirt. That's a fair deal. That's something Frederick might be able to do, Ian. You think that could be a thing Frederick can probably look into? He could probably do that.
Probably, Pat.
Probably. That'll work out great in the long run. So anyway, so the Atari VCS, well, at this point, I think we'll be lucky to see this being released. We're going to be lucky at this point.
I have a feeling, with this streaming thing, I have a feeling it's going to come out, and it's just literally, it's going to be one of the most hollow things out there. You're not going to be able to do anything on it that you can't do with a billion other systems. I'm not even trying to give Atari the benefit of the doubt. I just think that they will throw something out there. It's going to be awful, But they will throw something out there. Because at the end of the day, I think what they're going to look at is it worth not putting something out over putting out the cheapest, shittiest object we can that really bears no resemblance to what we were talking about, but we can say it's out there.
Well,
and
with
you
the
can
amount
access
of money,
this streaming service.
With the amount of money they've taken in, they'll put out, yeah, you're right, they'll put out something, but it's probably not enough, and the amount of buzz is so negative that this will not be able to be like a commercial product after the initial run.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be successful. I'm just saying that they will put something out to say they put something out.
Sure.
And I realize, is like putting a lot of faith into these idiots, but I do think they will put something out. It's going to be an absolute fucking disaster, and it's not going to resemble a goddamn thing that they said it would, which is going to be pretty impressive because they haven't said it's going to resemble much.
Well, you know what? My mind will be changed. Frederick, just mail me that Atari VCS shirt I'll start wearing on the podcast for you. Then my objectivity will be out the window during your press tour. That's all it's going to take, Frederick, a $10 T-shirt, and I'll be good to go there. All right, Ian, you know we're big COD fans.
Huge COD fans.
We're big Call of Duty fans.
I do like Whitefish.
Do you like Whitefish? Is Whitefish COD technically? Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different Whitefishes, but COD is an Atlantic Whitefish.
All right. Well, old gamers are not pleased, Ian, with the latest announcement. There's a certain mode that'll be exclusive to PS4 for an entire year. The survival mode within the Spec Ops mode.
So, from what I understand, Spec Ops, and you can come at me with your pitchforks if I get this wrong. Spec Ops mode in Call of Duty, it's been around for a little bit, and I believe it's the co-op mode. So you can play with other people. You can play with someone on the same couch. Certainly online.
It's also single player, according to what I'm reading here.
Oh, okay. And one of the modes within that, the survival mode, will be exclusive to PlayStation 4 for probably about a year. Look, I don't know enough about Call of Duty modes to talk about how big of a deal this is, but I will say that this little shit here is... The whole system exclusive thing is just... I don't know. It's weird. It seems to do nothing but piss off and splinter your fan bases. And I can't see...
Spec Ops survival mode.
I can't see what real benefit there is to Activision for doing it. I'm sure Sony paid them money for it, but Activision, you make a lot of money. How much money? I mean...
I don't see if anyone that's going to go out... Is Sony really thinking people are going to go out and buy their console to get one mode they can't get like on the Xbox? Like, I don't get that.
I think what it's to do is basically... it's for the people who own both systems, and there's a lot of people out there who do.
Okay.
For people who own both systems, it's to, you know, get you to go to one system's version over the other. But I just see this, I don't see how this doesn't breed bad blood between them and Microsoft.
Especially since they
between
have
all, players
yeah,
and,
especially since they're
and
finally
the company.
They're finally getting to the point where they have cross-platform mode, on this stuff, and now you have a mode that's not available on one of the consoles.
And
it's weird. And then
Activision does this a lot. They did it with the first Destiny too. They did the PlayStation 4 version got bonus stuff that the Xbox version did not.
Sure.
So I don't know. It's their thing, but I'm ready for a time, and I have a PS4, and I don't play Call of Duty. So even if I did, I'd have the right system for this to not affect me. But this shit is dumb, and it's petty, and I'm ready for it to go away.
And then after a year, it's also for the PC. It won't come out for a year until October 1st, 2020, this mode. A year into a game, a first-person shooter, that's pretty much the lifespan of a lot of these first-person shooters.
And yes, and that's the other takeaway from this is, but in a year's time, the next Call of Duty is going to be coming
out. Yeah, because they have their Call of Duty regular one, then they have their Black Ops one the next year, then they have the fucking other one the next year. They keep rotating, right?
Yeah, but they put one out every year.
Yeah, so, like Madden. So, I mean, yeah, so after a year, the fan base would dwindle to play this mode that's now no longer exclusive on your PC or Xbox One. It's a strange move. I'd rather the whole game just be exclusive on a single console. That's less of a strange move than doing a mode.
I
never...
Yeah. I mean, I know for some people, like, the exclusivity is not always because they were offered something, but because it's easier to work with one company over another sometimes.
This doesn't smell like that.
But no, that's what I'm saying. I know that that's sometimes what it is, but big third-party developers, I don't understand having anything exclusive to a single system anymore. You know, unless I said, like I said, it's a monetary thing, or maybe a smaller developer, there is a cost thing.
Oh, but you know, the best part about this is, in that when they released the trailer, the text on the screen, it says Special Ops Survival Mode, play first on PS4. The text on the bottom, I literally can't read how small it is. Timed exclusive content until October 1st, 2000. It's in like 0.04 font. Do you see how small that is?
No, I didn't.
It's extremely tiny. I'm talking like smaller than when you see ads on TV for like buying a car or like getting a loan. It's so small. I need a fucking magnifying glass to see it. That's how you don't see that in the GameSpot article? Scroll down. I didn't see that first until the article said the text was there. Right there. Look at that text.
Yeah, that's very tiny.
Very tiny.
It's very tiny. It's very tiny text.
That's incredible. You need a magnifying glass to see that. Oh, my God. All right. That's something comical. Yeah. Well, if you think there's a lot of people that have both consoles and they'll go to one versus the other, then it makes sense on that perspective. But for the amount of bad blood that you're creating for someone that doesn't have a PS4, there might be people that have a PS4 that also thinks it's bullshit. Because maybe they want to play with their friend, you know, cross-platform in a mode, now they can't do it. You know what I mean? If it's co-op. So the whole thing is just fucked.
Yeah, I have a PS4. I think it's bullshit. I'm an adult. There's no joy in me being able to be like, hey, I've got something you don't. Yeah.
I won the console war.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The CU Podcast is proud to be working with NordVPN.
Proud.
It's what I use to keep myself safe online, and you can too. You can too, Pat. If you care about the privacy and the security of your information, NordVPN is giving you 66% off a 2-year plan when you go to nordvpn.com/CU Podcast or use code CU Podcast at checkout.
It's a lot of percentages off.
Pat, what's a VPN?
I'm glad you asked. It's a virtual private network, and having one today is more critical than ever because if you're doing anything online, anything, your info and browsing habits are out there for anyone to get a hold of. So when you use NordVPN, you have access to over 4,000 super speedy servers in 62 countries, and those connections secure your info using military-grade high-tech encryption. That means your info and what strange things you might be able to do online, nearly impossible to track.
I'm using the NordVPN app on my phone and laptop, so that means when I'm getting free Wi-Fi at the coffee shop, an airport,
bagels.
I know things like my password and banking info are masked. Folks at PC Mag gave NordVPN their editor's top VPN choice. Just one account lets you protect up to how many?
Six.
Six. Six devices. There's an app for Android and iOS, unlimited bandwidth, and a money-back guarantee. Other potential benefits, hopping on servers around the world.
Wow.
Maybe watching some of that TV.
It's like a staycation.
That's right. Again, to get that special offer, 66% off a 2-year plan, go to nordvpn.com/CU Podcast or use code CU Podcast and get going with your secure web browsing today.
All right. Ian.
Yes.
We haven't talked about our buddy at Games in a while, have we?
No, we haven't.
Well, kind of been on the downturn. They got the rug pulled out from underneath them. They originally announced they were doing the Sega Genesis Mini. And Sega was like, wait a second, boys. I don't think that's happening. And that's the reason why, for the most part, it sounds like the Sega Genesis Mini is a solid little piece. You enjoyed it, right?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Pretty good. So Walgreens is suing at Games for breach of contract right now. The retailer alleges that the plug-and-play game company owes it nearly $1.62 million for unsold products it returned to them.
That's insane.
Wow. Okay. There's also a trademark infringement suit from Bandai Namco over Ms. Pac-Man happening right now. That's a nice separate lawsuit happening right now.
Yeah.
So let's start with the Walgreens one at first.
Sure.
Walgreens files suit. This is from the gamesindustry.biz. Walgreens files suit against At Games for breach of contract in August, saying it had a deal with the company that provided products on a guaranteed sale basis, meaning At Games would accept any unsold units back and refund the chain whatever it paid for them, in addition to an additional fee and shipping costs. So, you know, Walgreens is going to pay for the cost to get all the stuff in their warehouse, but if it doesn't sell, guess what? I want my money back for this unsold stuff, and you're going to pay the shipping cost to lug them back, right?
Yep.
Walgreens says it returned more than 66,500 units, for which it paid between $15 and $38 each, but At Games refused to make payment. As a result, Walgreens claimed it owed nearly $1.62 million from the company. Allowing At Games to retain the benefits of its own wrongdoing, as alleged herein, would violate fundamental principles of justice, equity, and good conscience, including by affording At Games the opportunity to sell the return items twice, Walgreens said in the suit. All right, well, we've seen At Games throw out their little plug-and-play, little Genesis-style controllers with, like, the Namco games on there, what right. have you, the past year and a half. They didn't look that good when we covered them. And apparently they sat on the shelves, and yeah. no one wanted them.
Yeah, well, there was some backlash on them, too, and I believe we covered it, because they were calling them, like, I don't know, like Arcade Burst or Namco, whatever. Yeah. But they were like the NES ROMs. They weren't even...
Or an arcade one sometimes, and they did the ones where they sent reviewers ones that had different ROMs than the ones that the public had.
Yeah.
It was a fiasco that was happening with it. Fiasco. But they're actually absolutely right. Walgreens. First off, they had an agreement, correct. But yeah, if they send this stuff back, if Walgreens already purchased the merchandise, and they have an agreement in stone saying, if we don't sell this, you guys are taking it back, then obviously it's a slam dunk in court. But if they send this stuff back, then At Games can resell it to another wholesaler or themselves. They can be double dipping at that point. So it's not good for At Games if this is exactly what the deal is with Walgreens. If you want to go over the Bandai lawsuit, in August this year, Bandai was alerted to the existence of a Ms. Pac-Man home arcade cabinet developed by At Games. The cabinet features copyrighted images and characters, and Bandai alleges that the Ms. Pac-Man software was included without its permission. Furthermore, Bandai alleges that At Games sold the product to retailers, making false claims that the Ms. Pac-Man arcade cabinet was legitimately licensed. This I didn't even hear about that. I didn't know that At Games put out an arcade cabinet.
So yeah, basically, At Games sold a bootleg Ms. Pac-Man cabinet to retailers. So then in August, I'm trying to get all this correct. In August, At Games basically bought the royalty interest that GCC owned. GCC was, and I think this isn't like a, this isn't, some people might not know, Ms. Pac-Man was not created by Namco. Mm-hmm. Pac-Man came out, and a group of people basically did a hack of Pac-Man and made Ms. Pac-Man. And then
it was auto at first, and then they changed.
Yeah, and so that went to that was sold to
Crazy Auto.
Was sold to Bally Midway and Namco, and that's how it became. It got back under the Namco banner. GCC would get royalties anytime that Ms. Pac-Man was used. I don't know the extent of the royalties. I don't know if it was for everything, but they did get some money anytime the game was basically used. So I know, like, Ms. Pac-Man on arcade collections and stuff like that, if it's on there, then GCC would have been getting some sort of a cut. So At Games went and bought that from them without Namco knowing.
Ah.
So now At Games will get royalties for usage of Ms. Pac-Man.
Oh, GCC will get royalties.
No, At Games. GCC sold off. Basically, GCC is getting rid of their stake.
Gotcha.
So now At Games has it.
But they don't have the rights to use the characters to market.
No. And so it's clarified a little bit down here. the let's see, where is it? They clarified it nicely. I'm just trying to find it. Reach Bandai Namco of America representative note that the company does not ordinarily comment on pending litigation. However, the company did comment to underline the nature of the rights at games bought and the ones Bandai Namco has. So basically, BNEA, so Bandai Namco, has exclusive rights to use them as Pac-Man Mark and to reproduce, distribute, display, perform, create derivative works of, and or use the Ms. Pac-Man copyrights, as well as to enforce the Ms. Pac-Man mark and Ms. Pac-Man copyrights in the United States. That's important.
Gotcha.
At Games thought that they had something going on that they didn't. So At Games has not acquired any control over the Ms. Pac-Man intellectual property, merely the rights to be paid royalties when it is used in commercial works. Position stems from the complicated way in which Ms. Pac-Man was developed. Three programmers, then students at MIT, developed a mod for Namco's Pac-Man that eventually became Ms. Pac-Man after they shopped it to Bally Midway. Over the years, Namco and its descendant companies acquired full control over Ms. Pac-Man, but even after agreements reached in 83 and 08 with the seven individuals connected to GCC's stake in the IP, some royalty rights and obligations were still unresolved.
Gotcha.
So those unresolved royalty rights and obligations are what I believe At Games went and got, and then basically thought they could, as far as I can tell, they felt like they could do what they wanted with it at that point.
According to, I'm looking at this boingboing.net article about who has the rights. So the claim from Bandai Namco is that they not only made this prototype Ms. Pac-Man miniature arcade cabinet, but they're now showed it to retailers and making deals with retailers.
Right.
For something they can't do. GameStop and Walmart about selling the cabinet without the involvement of Bandai Namco. Bandai Namco also believes At Games made false statements about its access to the IP. So they're alleging that At Games is like, oh yeah, we got this Ms. Pac-Man cabinet, we can do other stuff. And Bandai'd be like, no, you can't.
Right.
You can't just say that shit.
You can have some money from us by law, but that's it. Like, if we use it, right, it's not their place to make the call. So I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see Ms. Pac-Man stuff for quite some time. This seems like it's fairly bitter. You can read between these lines pretty easily.
That Namco band will be like, you're not touching any of our stuff ever again.
Oh, or
yeah.
Bandai Namco is just going to be like, well, I guess we're not going to see Ms. Pac-Man for a while.
Oh, I'm going to go one step further. Between this lawsuit and the Walgreens one, you might be saying bye to At Games.
Oh, I think we might be. And that's obviously the end. But until that gets settled, I wouldn't be surprised if Namco Bandai was like, okay, cool, we don't need to use Ms. Pac-Man stuff. We have so much else. Your bid has failed. You thought you had us, but we can simply not put out Ms. Pac-Man stuff. And therefore, you get nothing from these rights that you just actually paid money for to someone else.
Because if you got the software rights, but if you don't have the you can't market it, basically.
Well, they don't have the software rights. They just have the rights to make money off of it. They just have the rights. They just have royalty rights.
Royalty rights, but yeah, but if they don't have the trademark copyright.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. They have the rights to make money off it without having any of the other trademark.
So Bandai Namco, I could see them easily just being like, okay, fine. Well, then we're just not going to do anything with Ms. Pac-Man.
Because they don't want At Games to even get 2% or whatever the royalty is.
Yes. I see this being very bad blood. And I don't think it's going to... this ain't going to pan out the way At Games wants it to pan out.
So it's kind of like a mini power play by At Games.
Oh, it's a power play by At Games that is going to absolutely shit all over their faces.
Well, yeah, because this lawsuit's going to bleed them out if the Walgreens ones doesn't.
Yep.
You think Walgreens high-power lawyers are going to let this go about all this shitty plastic garbage they sent back that they already paid for and couldn't sell and want a refund on?
And if I've got this right, I mean, I'm sure At Games paid the GCC people a decent
probably
amount.
So I don't know what the royalty would be. 5%, 10%, we don't know what the royalty would be.
I don't know, yeah. But I'm assuming that At Games, in their
wisdom,
we gotcha, move here.
They didn't know that what they were really buying is that's they had to know what they were actually purchasing from GCC. GCC wouldn't have misrepresented. Like, we don't have the rights to make the games. We have just rights to royalties. They wouldn't misrepresent. Yeah. So this is At Games either overplaying their hand, I guess, in a really dangerous way.
I really think this was a kid who thought he was being smart.
They're gonna bully big Bandai Namco.
It's not gonna work. It's like the people who thought they were brilliant and bought all those Popeyes chicken sandwiches and then tried to sell them for $10 a piece outside of Popeyes.
People really try to do that?
Yep, and they were left with bags of cold chicken sandwiches. Well, these people thought that they could get one up on Bandai Namco, and I have a feeling they're not going to see much money from this.
Wow.
And that's if I'm following this correctly.
No, you clarified about the rights to the royalty, but you can have the rights to a royalty, but that doesn't mean you can produce the product or use the licensing of the character.
Right. If the person who can do that suddenly decides, we're not going to produce any more of this, well, then your right to a royalty means nothing.
So you purchase the royalty rights to, say, an upcoming CU podcast enamel pin, we'll just say.
Mm-hmm.
You have the royalty rights to a percentage, but you don't have the rights to produce the pin nor to use the images of the podcast in order to promote it.
So if we take this pin and we, if that pin were to come out and we were to melt all those pins down, then that royalty stake is nothing. It means nothing to me. Yeah. I can't go and make more.
So Big Daddy Pat will say, you know what then, Ian? I don't care if I make the majority. I don't like the fact they're getting anything. I'm not going to make them. And you can't make them either. So that's what you're saying, potentially what Bandai Namco is going to do with Ms. Pac-Man.
Yes.
Okay. I think Ms. Pac-Man is a little too big for that to happen.
Me too, but I think they can conveniently make Ms. Pac-Man go away for a year.
Well, they can still sue and say, you know what? We can sue you for a couple million dollars. We'll have you in court for years. Or give us the royalty rights back. We're not going to do business with you ever again. They're just going to strong arm. That's what I would do. They're probably going to do that. So then Bandai Namco will have 100% of the royalties. To Ms. Pac-Man.
Well, and that's where this is going.
That's where it's
going to
go.
Namco is finally going to have all the rights to Pac-Man.
I don't know what At Games coffers look like, but between this and the Walgreens thing, they're in trouble.
Well, the coffers are obviously low if they can't pay Walgreens back.
It's a lot of money. They overestimate how many people want their Burst products when they put. Remember they put out like
that's what they were called, Arcade Burst.
Burst,
right?
They did the mini consoles and they did the controller ones. It's just too many products at once. They did, like, what, 12 different ones? Remember we covered it? We couldn't keep track of them.
It's a classic example of reading the market wrong. Just because everyone wants a Nintendo Mini doesn't mean that people just want games and consoles and minis. They want
a quality one.
They want a quality one.
They don't want, like, the eighth time they can get Space Invaders on something.
I shit on the internet a lot for being like the beginning of a lot of bad things, but one thing that it's been very good for is consumer awareness. You can't shuttle out a shit product anymore and really expect it to do very well. Word's gonna get around, especially in a hobbyist group like video games, where these people are they're already connected to the internet as it is. They're already spouting opinions every day. So yeah, you can't really just sneak one by. It's like what Sony did. It's funny how these companies are very, very slow to catch up with the notion of knowledge just being instantly available.
You can still buy the Bandai Namco Flashback Blast console for $18 on Prime.
Blast, that's what it was.
Has a burst blast, whatever. It's like a Starburst ad. $18 on Prime, 3-star rating out of 5. And then you can get another one for only $6. The Legends Flashback, that's the one that has Space Invaders on it. No one wants that. So $6 on Prime, they are losing money at that point on that product. They're just trying to get rid of it, whoever's selling it for $6. The Activision one's on $8. They're all really inexpensive right now for those. So, and then they also have all the other ones that they're doing, the console ones. But those controller ones, oof, I don't know about that. Oh, you can get them used for $12 or from other sellers. So, yeah, these aren't selling for anything anymore. And obviously, they didn't sell at Walgreens.
No.
Walgreens is like, you know what? We'd rather have shelf space for all Halloween items that we put out in early September. You know, we're not going to be dealing with this plastic crap anymore.
Yeah, you saturate the market with crap, and people are going to stop buying your crap.
Yeah, and because these all-in-ones have been out now for like 15 years almost at this point in some form or another. And I think the Fed is gone. When it comes to these, we're way past it. They have to be quality.
Even the quality ones, I don't think we have a lot. We have a lot of room left for these. I mean, the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo one came out and they were great. The Sony one came out and it was awful, and people were like, "Well, that's the end of it." Especially when Sega announced they were doing another one, and they said At Games was behind it. People are like, "This is over." Sega saw the writing on the wall with At Games and was smart, and then did it in house with M2 and put out a really nice, reasonable product. But I do think that after the Turbo, I don't know.
You're running out of steam. And it's, even the turbo, I'm still struggling. I don't know if that'll sell well or not based upon the no one had it. So I don't know if that'll sell well.
I think
well
it
or not.
Will sell decently based on the fact that no one had it because of curiosity and the fact that it's expensive stuff.
Sure.
Talking to people in the store, I've had a lot of people been like, yeah, I saw that. I don't really know what it's about, but I'm going to grab it because I've always been interested in those games. That is kind of the general consensus. Will it translate over to sales? I don't know. But even when Nintendo comes around, if they do a 64 Mini, it will sell. But I think we are getting to the point where even the well-done ones, the novelty of the mini console is wearing off, and these things do take up space.
And 3 years, even the, well, because the NES Classic is only 3 years ago.
I think within 3 years, all of these are going to be things that, again, you're seeing at a flea market, like the old plug-and-plays. I no matter the quality, I think when it comes time for people to clean house, they're going to look at these little things, and as nice as they seem, I think they're going to be like, this can go. Especially because a lot of the market for them, outside of collectors, were people who were impulse buying them. Hey, I remember this. This will be a good holiday gift.
Well, the big thing for the Konami is we don't still know who's producing it. We don't know like who's actually going to be
doing it. Yeah,
one's manufacturing it.
Yeah.
So if that's like at games, forget it. Like
I don't think that. Well, Konami might be the one company I'd count on to be like, hey, why not?
Yeah, you guys can do it cheap.
Yeah,
they will just throw it on a controller. We wouldn't have a system anymore.
You got any more of them Sega Genesis controllers? Perfect.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we got like 20,000 ready to go. Konami will give them to you dirt cheap, and they're red too. So you just throw on blue buttons, red.
Do you mind if Pac-Man's on the controller? No, that's fine. Pac-Land.
Konami, please, Konami, don't mess up the TurboGrafx MIDI. I'm surprised it's happening. Please don't screw this
They've
up.
They've already showed the cases.
I know, but I mean like. The game's selection is surprisingly really good.
Yep.
It's only missing a couple that I would put on. I got Splatterhouse back on there. We're going off topic, but please, Conway, don't screw this up because this is the one. This is mine. This is Pat's. It's the only kid in my town that had a TurboGrafx. Don't screw it up. All right. Well, that's good. We'll come back to these topics later about these all-in-ones, and we'll see when they finally die out here. All right, Ian.
Pat.
Do you remember the Super Mario Brothers Super Show?
I do.
Hey, Paizan!
Yeah, I do. I don't know
good
if
good old Captain Lou.
I don't remember it fondly, but I don't hate it either. Like, I used to like watching it when I was a kid.
Yeah, absolutely liked watching it.
Going back to it, yeah.
It's what really firmly established in the Super Mario Brothers canon that, you know, they were Brooklyn plumbers. You
yes.
know? Because that preceded even the movie of the Super Mario Brothers Super Show
right.
by a couple years. I believe it was like 3 years before that, because the movie was, what, 92? And the show was like 89, about. And the cartoons were great. They started off, it was a Monday to Friday thing, and on Friday you had Legend of Zelda. And that was what a lot of people really loved. It was only on for one season, though, I believe. But then they went and it became Super Mario Bros. 3 show, and that was, I believe, then on Saturday mornings, and then it became Super Mario World. But it was the same style, same voice actors, I think, for the most part. And then they phased it out. But people love Super Mario Brothers, the cartoon. People do love it still. There's a fondness for it. And so it turns out that there's a father and son team working on a Super Mario Brothers Super Show platformer.
Yeah. So
and it's a really cool story.
This, it appears to, so the fan game is being developed by Jesus Lopez. And this is from the Kotaku article by Zach Zweizen. Being developed by Jesus Lopez, an animator who worked on various games, including Simpsons Tapped Out, DuckTales Remastered, and Shantae Half Genie Hero. So he's responsible for the stuff that I did like in DuckTales Remastered. The look of it, the animation.
Okay.
That sort of stuff. I mean, the
pedigree is there.
The problem I always had with older WayForward games, it wasn't the graphics. They've always been beautiful, beautiful games. So he's doing it with his two young kids who are helping with artwork and programming. He's been working on the project for about 3 years. So all of the animations are hand-drawn in the style seen on the Super Show. And levels are set in locales from there. The first level of the game is set in Pasta Land, where the first episode of the show is set. Guy's still got a lot he wants to make. But, you know, creating animation like this takes time. But it's just a personal project for him that he's doing to keep his, as he says, it's a fun thing for him to do in his free time with his kids. This is one of my many personal projects so I can stay sharp as an animator in the video game industry. So I don't even, as far as I can tell, you can't even get this and play it. It's just something that him and his family are doing for fun, which is really cool because it looks nice for a fan game. I mean, you can tell this guy's an animator. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can watch a video, and even the Kotaku article has just an animated GIF at the top, and you can see Mario running and jumping through the pasta land. And it does. It looks really good. It looks like the show.
Yeah, and you have to remember, and I actually looked it up, looks like the successive series only kept a couple of voice actors, but they recast Mario and Luigi for the Super Mario 3 and Super Mario World shows.
Okay.
I just looked that up. I didn't watch those as much, but I watched all of these. They really, I'm talking, leaned heavily into the Italian-American stereotypes.
Yes,
and pasta
did.
On the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. So when you see all the pasta, and you literally see spaghettis on forks, you see a bunch of rigatoni and ziti's laying around. There was so many pasta puns on that show.
Yes.
That if...
I love how the background is all like red and white checkerboard too.
Italian Americans don't get offended at this stuff, but it's almost like I should. It's not like the Pauly D situation that was horrible.
That's offensive.
But like
cannoli cream into people's
mouths. But think about the extent they really leaned into the stereotypes with that. But it was great. It was good fun. And remember, in this show, they were just Italians from Brooklyn, and they were, you know, hey, come on, hey, well, oh, I can go for some lasagna right now. Like, they said that stuff. Vinny from Vine Sauce does the best Mario show impression ever. Like, he does it. Like, it's incredible. I check out when he talks like that. But, yeah, it looks like there's just a lot of love put into this. Obviously, care. This will take forever if they do a full game, like, because especially if it's hand-drawn. They already talk about trying to scale it down. If you watch this blew up because of Swanky Box did a YouTube video on it talking about it, and I almost didn't want to see a video on this because while I learned about it, you hope that Nintendo, you know, wouldn't be offended and try to see and do this. Well, you said it's not public though, so you know,
as far as I can tell, it's not public, and I don't think they're trying to put it out publicly.
Sure. But people would love to see a game like this.
Yeah,
the great point that I've seen made is that this is the one time from the Swanky Box video that there are elements that were established in the Super Mario Brothers Super Show that lived on in the games later on, like Toad's voice being a big one.
Yeah.
That were established during that show, the characters' personalities, somewhat, things like that. But Nintendo never acknowledges the cartoons themselves. They never talk about them. They never do anything with them, any merchandise. They've grown past it where now Mario is like this almost non... They try to make him a non-Italian character, even though he's definitely Italian. Now he's some, like, generic...
Didn't they say he's not a plumber anymore?
Well, they said he's, like, 24 years old.
26,
when Captain Lou was, like, 50 when he did this show. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense.
A young, sprightly, hirsute 26.
Why are you ignoring what you established in the 80s? You know, and early 90s about what Mario is? Does he look like he's not Italian to you? I mean, look at him. Anyway, so that was a very good point. This gets back to the roots of what we thought of Mario being before they made him sanitized, you want to say, by the time it got to N64.
Yeah.
He's still hey, let's go. But like they're already trying to make him non-Italian kind of and make him more cartoony and goofy at that point, even though they still had the Italian, you know, stereotypes. But the pasta stuff was only, though, you know, seen in that cartoon, though.
The pasta, like the, oh, yeah.
Pasta and meatballs all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't offended. Maybe I should have been. It wasn't, you know, Pauly D with fucking cream.
Fucking shoot cannoli cream into people's mouths. While someone dressed in a Mario fucking costume is waving the Italian flag.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Oh, my God.
Thanks for reminding. Was that last year? Holy shit. I didn't want to fight someone as much as I wanted to in my life at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is a magnificent looking project, obviously. The guy doing it has obviously a big pedigree as being an animator, so it's legit. I love in the video put out, you can actually see the line drawings of like Mario flipping in the air. And like that. So you see it developing like a real cartoon. They do the line drawings first, then they start filling in and developing from there. It looks fantastic here. That's what more to say about it. It even has like the old Koopa look of the Koopas, how they looked kind of like drones back then. They didn't actually look like turtles that much, you know. So I guess we'll check back on this in a couple of years, and maybe they'll have a few more stages done. because this is a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
There's a reason they don't make a lot of hand-drawn, you know, animated movies anymore. It's a ton of work to do it, and it's tough. All the frames you have to do. I think they didn't mention, like, you have to cut down the amount of frames of animation per movement from, like, in half.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's insane.
You have and to it still looks every, nice.
It still looks, yeah, you can get away with it. You can do, like, even, like, 6-7 frames in a second. You don't need, like, you know, 24 frames of animation. You know, it doesn't be classic Disney here. All right, well, that's a feel-good story that hopefully Nintendo's like, all right, lawyers, why don't you, you know, let's
keep an eye on it, but you let that family have its fun.
Pretend not to know what's happening, but yeah, if they put it out, video game, well, you're going to have to slap them, but, you know, let them have their fun.
Slap them gently.
Don't ruin the kids' fun there. You know, the 10-year-old supposedly actually doing the game coding, which is cute.
That is.
If I was 10 years old, geez, all I can do is, like, load up a game in you know, GW Basic. It's about all I could do on the IBM XT we still had. All right, Ian.
Patrick.
How do you access the CU Podcast Patreon?
Go to patreon.com/CU Podcast.
And what can you do there?
You decide if you like what you see, and then you give us money. Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry.
You decide if you like what you see. Hey, you like what you see? Hey, we're not selling a car.
No. So at the old Patreon, you can read a writing that I do about once a week. You can vote in a poll for a weekly topic that you, the listeners, decide. What else can you do? You can join a hangout with me where I'll talk to you, you know, at you.
And access to the CU Podcast Discord where Ian doesn't visit that much anymore. I have to get back in there.
Me too. I wonder if anyone else goes there. But the important parts are the writing, the early people, access to the
people
video.
People always in there, Ian.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
All right. Guilty pleasure movies. I already gave it away what they were. I'm sorry I did that. All right, in third place at 19%, Nintendo turns 130, or did. What past non-gaming companies could have gotten into gaming? We were thinking about stuff like Coleco, which was, you know, Connecticut Leather Company doing a game system eventually. Second place, 27%, favorite board games. Nope, no one cares about that as much. Number one, Ian, at 54%, guilty pleasure movies. And how do we not make this about Bloodsport? I don't know, but... Ian, what's some of your guilty pleasure movies?
So, I hate the term guilty
How
pleasure.
How do you define guilty pleasure?
Well, that's the thing. I don't guilty like the pleasure. Term guilty pleasure because if I enjoy something, I'm not, like, afraid to admit that I enjoy it or that I feel
guilty
about it.
This is the definition. Something such as a movie, TV show, or piece of music that one enjoys despite feeling that it is not generally held in high regard. So most people critically don't like it, but you do.
Well, yeah. So I mean, I know what answers people are looking for. I just don't feel guilty about it. My big guilty movie pleasures are teen movies. I love teen movies. Can't Hardly Wait is one of my all-time favorites. I adore that movie. 10 Things I Hate About You and Mean Girls. But it's hard. Can't Hardly Wait is fun, but it would be hard to argue that there isn't merit to 10 Things I Hate About You and Mean Girls.
I remember, I've seen most of 10 Things. What was that? That was a takeoff of Taming of the Shrew, was it?
Taming of the Shrew with Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger.
It's a great cast.
It's a fucking fantastic
movie. And what's
it's
his name?
It's so good.
Not just then, and then you got the young kid from Third Rock who's now the best thing he's in. He's in it too.
Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great cast.
It's a fantastic, fantastic movie. And Mean Girls is practically fucking
Never saw
art.
That one.
Oh, God, it's so
People
good.
People swear by that movie. It's Lindsay Lohan was at the height of her powers. It was like 2005, 2004.
But, I do like... I do like a lot of teen movies. Like I said, Can't Hardly Wait's a big one for
You know what?
Me.
Not another teen movie. That's one of the best parody movies ever. No one talks about it.
Cruel Intentions from the 90s. That's a guilty pleasure.
That's a weird one. That's one of the brother and sister. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. It's a weird movie. It's Ryan Felipe, Reese Witherspoon, and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
That's right.
So, yeah, I will sit down and kind of watch any of that crap. I don't consider Bloodsport a guilty pleasure. There is no guilt in my love of Bloodsport.
Well, most people won't highly regard Bloodsport, even though it's one of the finest martial arts movies, definitely of the 80s.
Yes.
Not all time.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is.
It is.
It helped reestablish the tournament, tournament subgenre.
Yes, exactly. My favorite subgenre of action movie.
Yes. I'm looking at this ranker.com. Crowd rank list greatest, and some of these aren't okay. Independence Day is a bad movie. That actually qualifies because that's an enjoyable. That's one of the best worst movies ever.
Independence Day is good, yes,
but it's
Sure.
It's terrible, but it's well produced terrible. Like, it's, there's so many weird things that Will Smith with his little quips when he punches an alien in the face.
Yeah.
It's just, that's a guilty pleasure. I see Dirty Dancing on this list. I see Roadhouse. Roadhouse is a notoriously bad movie that people love. Grease is on here. Is that a bad movie, Grease? The musical? I see Armageddon on here. Armageddon I saw in the movie theaters. Armageddon, I don't know anyone who likes that movie, but it's on here. I mean, it made a ton of money at the time. Right. That was the height of like the Michael Bay-esque sort of summer blockbuster, late 90s. Now, I see Karate Kid on this list. Karate Kid is a well-regarded film. I don't know why I see that on here as a guilty pleasure. I've never heard people diss Karate Kid. It's a really good movie overall. Ghostbusters is on this list. That's a really good movie. I don't know why that'd be on here. Alita Battle Angel's on this list. Is that already a guilty pleasure? Was that a bad movie?
I don't. It looked like shit.
Point Break. I can see that. That's a good movie.
Point Break is a
lot of Patrick Swayze stuff on this list.
If Point Break is a bad movie or a guilty pleasure, then I am fucking guilty because that movie is fantastic.
Starship Troopers is a weird
fucking
one.
Johnny Utah. Johnny Utah is one of the greatest cops in fucking film history.
Well, people don't realize that Starship Troopers, you know, is a satire. Yes. A lot of people don't realize that. If you play it straight, yeah, it's a terrible movie about people battling bugs. But it's supposed to be a satire. Now, I'm not sure. I haven't watched it in a while. I forget how strongly those satirical tones come through. I know, like, in all the doing my part things and on the government things, it's obvious. But once I get to, like, the battle stuff, I forget. But Con Air is a bad movie that I will watch. That's a guilty pleasure. That's on this list. That's a terrible movie.
I want to watch Point Break again.
If you ever watched it all the way through. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Bodhi!
That first Pirates
Johnny!
Movie. That first Pirates movie is really actually good. I would not put that on this list. They get worse as they go along.
The first one was pretty decent. The second and third one were fine.
They're bloated. I fell asleep, I think, in the third one. It was like 3.5 hours.
They bloated, yes.
Then there's two others after that somehow. Now they're like rebooting it. Ace Ventura, I never liked those early Jim Carrey movies. Top Gun. I don't think Top Gun's a bad movie. I like Top Gun. It's a guilty pleasure. The sequel looks incredible from that trailer. I don't know if you saw that trailer.
No.
Spaceballs, a guilty pleasure? I think Spaceballs is a fine little parody movie.
Spaceballs is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's a goofy Mel Brooks movie. Lost Boys on the list.
I was going to say Lost Boys, but I can't call that it's so good. It's so good.
I haven't seen it in a while. Footloose is on the list. I don't remember that being bad. See, Bill and Ted is not a guilty pleasure. Bill and Ted's actually a fine movie. It's a fine comedy to me.
Yeah.
I actually think it's a fine movie. Smoking the Bandit's on here. I don't remember that. See, I think they're confusing like stuff that's not high art that's good as being a guilty pleasure.
Well, I think
that's not what it means.
That's why
Caddyshack's on here. Caddyshack's one of the best comedies. I actually watched it with Andre. We came up because honestly, I don't think I ever seen it uncut. I'm like, you were watching Caddyshack on Netflix. We're watching it.
I don't know. That's why I don't like the term guilty pleasure. Own the things that you like, but of movie.
Are you my friend, Ian?
I've never seen Caddyshack.
Wow. Okay. That was Ted Knight's the funniest thing.
I mean,
in the
I could tell that that was supposed to be Ted Knight, but I damn.
Okay, Pookie.
I watched a lot. I watched a lot of Mary Tyler Moore. So
Ted Knight was so freaking funny.
Yeah. But
Naked Gun's on this list. That was great. Galaxy Quest is a good movie. See, something like Face Off I put on the list because that movie was...
Sure.
I see Indiana Jones on the list. Indiana Jones is one of the best movies of the 20th century, and it's
on
the list.
I was going to bring up maybe Temple of Doom, but I love Temple of Doom.
That's my personal favorite one.
It's my favorite, too.
Yes, which is funny.
God, Lost Boys is so good. If you've never seen Lost Boys, go watch Lost Boys.
Big Trouble Little China is a good movie. They're trying to remake it with The Rock. I hope they don't. And Ian finally saw it. It was good.
Yeah, I think when a lot of people say guilty pleasure, it's people who think they have very highbrow taste and they want to admit that they like something that's a little action.
Fast and the Furious is on this
cheesy.
List.
Fast and the
Gremlins
Furious
is on this list. Rocky IV. Rocky IV is a bad movie. That to me is a guilty pleasure. That's a really bad movie, but you have to watch Rocky IV.
Rocky IV is. I do like Rocky IV. That's a guilty pleasure
because that's just it's a string of montages cobbled together into. There's like six montages in that movie. That's the movie.
It's a string of anti-red montages.
Yeah,
in the dying
and
days
then Pauly
of the Soviet
creepily
Union.
Hitting on his robot friend. That's the whole movie.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, stuff like that here. Mummy Returns, Purple Rain, never saw it. Commando was a bad movie. I'll give it that.
I had Bonnie and Lincoln. I can't remember if Bonnie hadn't seen it or if Lincoln hadn't seen it or if both of them had only seen it halfway. But I'm going back to it because I almost started watching it again last night. And I'm gonna because God damn it, it's October. Lost Boys. So good. Okay. Not a fucking guilty pleasure movie.
Bloodsport's on this list at 64 on Ranker.com. Ian. Just to let you know, Bloodsport's on the list. You know what? If you're going to take one of those three canon trilogy, watch the canon trilogy Van Damme movies. Cyborg is a guilty pleasure. Cyborg is the worst of those movies by far, but it's still a good movie.
Yeah.
I'll still watch Cyborg.
What else is canon that was him?
Yeah, he did Bloodsport. He did Bloodsport, then he did Cyborg, then he did Kickboxer.
Okay.
That was his original deal as a star.
I was trying to remember who did Lionheart, or what company did Lionheart.
But that was right after that was, at that point it was more mainstream. But Cyborg was such a weird movie because it was so cheap, low budget.
Yep.
It was like one of those early 80s post-apocalypse movies. It looks like it was shot in the early 80s, but it was shot like, what was Cyborg? 88? 89?
Lionheart was 90. I want to say Cyborg. Fucking Bloodsport's 88, so I'm going to say that 89 is Cyborg.
Yeah. He had that weird circular shotgun gun. It wasn't a real gun. It was so weird.
Vonnie brought me home the Cyborg comic. It was a one-shot. And you get to the end of it, and it's like, watch the movie for the thrilling conclusion.
Now I want to talk about Cyborg, because we never talk about Cyborg is the underappreciated Van Damme gem. Cyborg is a 1989 American martial arts cyberpunk film directed by Albert Pyun. It was definitely somewhere. They made that in Europe. It was not in the U.S.
No.
Van Damme stars as Gibson Rickenbacker. I forgot his name was Gibson Rickenbacker,
which is hilarious.
Wow. Okay.
Guitar bass. That's my name.
I did not know there was a Cyborg trilogy.
I did not know that.
Followed
either.
By 1993's Knights, also entitled The Kingdom of Metal, Cyborg Killer, and Omega Doom in 1997. I did not know. There's also Cyborg sequels, Cyborg 2 and Cyborg 3, The Recycler. I did not know. We're going to have a Cyborg night, I think, at some point. Anyway, Ian... what's your guilty pleasure movie out there? What do you like to watch out there?
And don't feel guilty about it.
Don't feel guilty.
But what are some of your like easy to watch movies?
See, fuck this. Tremors on this list. Tremors is still studied in film schools to have one of the best screenplays ever written.
Tremors
is
amazing.
Textbook movie structure when you watch Tremors. What a great film. I'm pissed they never came out. They're supposed to have the series of bringing Kevin Bacon back.
I know.
And what sci-fi didn't pick it up. They're going to do fucking Sharknado 15, but they're not going to do a Kevin Bacon Tremors series?
I'm always down to watch Bacon shoot some graboids.
Because Kevin Bacon didn't come back for the other four sequels. He was going to come back. And you denied us.
He wasn't in the sequel?
No, they got a guy that kind of looked like him with Michael Gross.
Oh, that's right. I've seen the first three Tremors movies. There's three. There's what, four?
There's a bunch.
Or there's probably far more than that. I've seen
How
the first
How could you
three.
Not have the opportunity to bring Kevin Bacon back to do Tremors? I didn't know there was a 2003 series they tried.
Yes.
But I
knew that.
You got to bring Kevin Bacon back for a Tremors series. I had the idea to revisit the character, Bacon told the crowd gathered in Austin. Pretty much the only character I've ever played in a movie that ever thought, this would be a fun guy to check out 25 years later, just because he was such a mess. Finding out what happened to him post-Worms would be an interesting journey, and you denied us.
Yeah, that sucks.
I'll fund it, Ian. I'll fund it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. The proceeds from a certain Super Nintendo guidebook, I'll fund that. I want to see it happen.
Tremors.
Yeah.
Tremors 3 Aftershocks. Tremors 3 Back to Perfection. So I only saw the first and second, because Back to Perfection didn't come out until 2001. So I've seen the first two Tremors.
Well, by the third one, they're like flying around, right? There's like ones that fly, I think.
Tremors 4, The Legend Begins. Tremors 5, Bloodlines. Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell, 2018.
What?
Tremors, Island Fury, to be disclosed.
How did they do one in 2019 without Kevin Bacon when he wants to revisit the character?
I have no idea.
A Cold Day in Hell?
A Cold Day in
Is
Hell.
Michael Gross still doing them?
Or
is he even gone at this point? They're still the guy from Family Ties.
Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell. Let's hit this main article real quick and catch... Michael Gross is Burt Gummer.
Oh, he's still in there.
Yep.
Dying from graboid poison by that point. It was so great. Remember Reba McEntire was his wife?
Mm-hmm.
That was so great. Those characters were so great.
She was awesome.
So great.
And that scene in the basement. Oh my god.
I gotta get
God, Ray McIntyre was hot right back then, wasn't she?
She
had a TV show in the 90s too. There was a time where Ray McIntyre was like,
she was cute.
She was like the hot Southern crossover Bill for the red hair. Sorry. Anyway, we're going off topic here. Well, thanks for that question about guilty pleasure movies.
Yeah, Reba's always been kind of nice.
She's gonna be what, 60 by now? Ray McIntyre. Sorry. Now it's a Ray McIntyre. Out. Now we're just gonna start looking at her pictures online.
That'll get weird quick. all right, so Reba McIntyre, she's 64 years old.
She still looks great.
She does.
So the Tremors was what, 25 years ago?
Yeah.
What was that, 90, 92? So she would have been about 40 at the time? Nice. Good old Reba. All right, moving on here. All right, Q&A time on the CU podcast. Do you want to do one or two here? Which one, one or two? You want to just do one?
Let's just do one.
Okay.
Whichever one.
Okay. This is from at Warren Larson 97. Prices will ebb and flow, but do you think NES/SNES will always be collectible as the birth point of modern gaming?
My answer to that is no. I think because of... let's look at NES, just for example. I think NES has had a longer run in terms of being collectible because it is kind of the birthplace of the point of modern gaming. It's when video games looked more or less like what they said they were going to look like. Anyone can pick them up and play them today, and it's not like it's super abstract. You can pick up a copy of Mario Brothers and play it. You pick up a copy of Adventure, then you've never played it. You're never gonna. Yeah, I mean,
they established the marketable characters going forward in franchises, right, for the most part.
So I think that NES has enjoyed a longer run of collectability because of that. But no, I don't think it's it's going to be evergreen, and I certainly don't think it'll be evergreen for the Super Nintendo. Because once you get past the NES, I think the NES does, love it or hate it, it was like the spark point for modern console gaming. Now, though, I think that the whole notion of modern gaming, the birth of modern gaming, the beginning of modern gaming, people who are younger than us, people who are born now, are going to keep seeing the things that they grew up with as perhaps birth points of modern gaming.
Sure.
And I think those will be collectible for a while. I've talked to Pat, and I have had some disagreements on it, but yes, there are people right now out there, and they're not going to try to do full sets, but actively collecting PlayStation 2. It's what they grew up with. I don't know that they're going to consider it the birth point of modern gaming, but at some point, the general public, the general collecting public, is going to be of an age where they're not really going to consider the NES the start of that. They're going to look at it as the start of 3D gaming or the start of photorealistic gaming. And I think the importance of the system that they're collecting for, they're going to find their own reasons to make that system important in their minds. Just like we're sitting here calling the NES the birthplace of modern gaming, but I mean, there's other birthplaces of modern gaming too. The Atari, the arcade.
Relative. What do you describe as modern? I don't think something could be modern if it doesn't exist anymore. So, like when you say the Atari 2600, there's almost nothing related to gaming nowadays that goes back to the 2600. You can say, yeah, there was cartridges, it was popular, sure, but it died out.
All I'm getting at is
the NES style of gaming did not die out.
The beginning point of gaming for everyone is going to be changing as we get older.
But modern gaming, he means like, I guess historically would always be seen as that, and that's why it'll always be collectible. I don't know. Just because it's a birth point in time historically doesn't mean there'll be interest in it.
Sure.
Because look at like the birth of rock and roll was in the 50s, and people aren't listening to rock and roll music more so than modern rock or something like AC/DC.
The birth of recorded sound was, you know, cylinders. I'm not buying cylinders.
Now I'm thinking because I heard that. I heard the cylinder in, you know, the Edison plants in New Jersey. Murray had a little lamb. It was slow. I heard that.
That's pretty cool. You know,
those cans, remember?
Yeah.
That's still there. I was kind of, it wasn't a shock, but the derision that the Switch Online got for not having Super Nintendo games and NES games, and then every month was like, who cares about these games? And it was like, these, some of these are classic games. Just because you didn't grow up with them doesn't mean they're not good. It happened quickly.
And there was a lot of shit put on there.
I wouldn't say a lot, Ian. But the point is this, is that I think people younger than us, people like in their early 20s, would be willing to accept the Super Nintendo as acceptable. I can play games like that. I'll play Super Mario World, but I may not, maybe I won't want to play Super Mario Brothers, the original. Maybe that's too primitive for even for them. And so I think, like you said, in that respect, yeah, they don't care about what came before.
Yes, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. We look at Nintendo as the start. Well, some people older than us would argue the 2600, but we're going to look at the 2600 stuff and be like, yeah, it's a little primitive, but the Nintendo stuff, no, this is the start. And then, obviously, you're right, because we did see that with the Nintendo Online stuff, people basically making the same arguments about NES games that we would have made about Atari 2600 games.
Sure.
So, yeah, that cutoff for what people think is the start, or what they can easily get into, that's going to constantly shift. So, no. Long story short, I do not think it'll always be collectible.
Well, from a pragmatic standpoint, I mean, NES games are already on the downswing. They have been for 3 years now. There's just too many of them. When you say, will they always be collectible, what do you mean? Do you mean any random Super Mario Brothers cart? Do you mean the entire library? Do you mean a high-end complete box copy of Super Mario 3? What do you mean it will always be collectible? I still maintain that 90% of the library is going to rapidly decline in value the same way 2600 games do. The same way you can't give away Intellivision games at this point. No one gives a shit about that console. No one cares about the Odyssey 2. Like, you're going to have a similar issue with the NES. It might take a little bit longer because the prices are so much higher now on average. But it will get to a point that, yeah, that they'll just sit around. And it won't matter if it's a birth point of anything. There won't be enough people to keep the value arisen because we'll be dead or retired. That's just a stark reality.
Yeah.
People will move on. Maybe people will be collecting the last remnants of physical media. They'll be collecting Switch physical games in 20 years. And that'll be something people collect. I probably don't see that happening, but there will be some people maybe that'll go after it. But we are in the final throes of physical media by and large. And it'll be seen as a relic in the past, the same way, like, you know, kids growing up might be, oh, it's cool they had records and vinyl and cassettes. It's all on their phone or all on YouTube listening to music. They'll have no need to even worry about what existed before.
Right.
That's just reality. I mean, piano rolls, Ian. Go back to piano rolls. My grandfather's piano rolls.
I want pizza rolls.
Leave a comment on this web zone for some pizza rolls, Mr. Plinkett. All right. Is that it? We want to do another topic, or are you good?
I'm good. We're good.
We used to do 3-hour podcasts.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was a nightmare.
How hyper manic was I back in like 2013, 14 that I could do that?
Real hyper manic.
Well, I got the NES guy booked up because I was manic. But yeah, we used to do like 25 topics?
Yeah, it was gross.
Now we can't get to like 10 without being, oh, I'm tired. I'm old now.
And we do it weekly.
Well, plus we had so many little like 2-minute topics that, you know what I mean? They weren't as beefy.
Yeah, no, that's true. We definitely had a lot of sub-5-minute clips up there.
We've probably had in this 6-plus years on the podcast, if you average out 180 episodes, we've probably done over 2,000 topics. Because the average is probably still between 15 to 20 topics an episode.
It's fucking wild.
Isn't that? You imagine if we did it every week? We'd be at episode 360 by now.
360!
360! Hogan was on Raw. I know you enjoy hearing about Hogan being back. Yeah, you know what they're doing?
Great. What?
They're doing the fourth Saudi Arabian sweet blood Saudi money four they're doing. So they're having Team Flair versus Team Hogan. So which means that the Saudi princes just want to see the two old guys hanging outside the ring. They'll probably throw a punch at each other. I don't know. And just have teams fight each other, I guess Survivor Series style. So it's Orton captaining Team Flair, and then Team Hogan is being captained by Seth Rollins. You're already like, I can't believe this. Yep.
Sounds awful.
And Sting is supposed to be at SmackDown, because SmackDown is the premiere on Fox this Friday. I would not be shocked that they finally do Sting versus Undertaker, which is the only good thing that's going to come out of all of this to finally do it, even though it's, you know, 20 years too late. But I can almost guarantee
it will be miserable.
I I just want CG fireballs thrown at each other. I don't want Sting to actually do anything. I don't want him to get hurt. Just throw CG fireballs at him. That was stupid. Anyway, I just thought you'd like that, but that's what happened on Raw.
God, that's awful.
It's actually a good show, though. Raw was actually pretty entertaining overall.
Yeah, we'll see if they can keep that up.
Well, Heyman's more and more in control, so you know Heyman's got a good mind for it.
True.
There. But hopefully Vince gets knee-deep into the XFL stuff, that he stays away, doesn't realize what's going on. But Vince McMahon doesn't sleep. He supposedly sleeps like an hour a day. So you always know what's happening. I know. He's unique there. All right, so that's what's going on. We'll be at Retro Gaming Expo October 19th and 20th. There might be a certain Super Nintendo guidebook there. Retrobalooza is the same weekend. I cannot attend it, but there also might be a certain Super Nintendo guidebook there for sale as well. Probably. So if you're in Dallas-Fort Worth area, you can do that. And I'll be in Syracuse for our return after a year off to Retro Game Con. And that's at in Syracuse, New York. And that's November 2nd and 3rd. I will be seeing Rocco the Wonder Dog there.
Boom!
And her handler, Antoinette, my friend Antoinette, will be there as well. So anything else going on here? We're just about going to wrap this bad boy up.
Just wrapping it up.
Okay.
Like it's in puff pastry.
Okay, then.
Wrap it in phyllo dough.
Ian, did you bring me any mini omelets this week? Those were really good, tasty.
I appreciate it. No, I didn't. I didn't cook anything this weekend. I don't know why. I just didn't have the. Oh goodness gracious! I didn't have the old cooking bone.
The cooking bone?
My green thumb cooking bone.
Okay.
I don't know.
Before this gets creepy with Ian's bone, I'm Pat Contry. We'll see you next time.
Bye.